Welcome back in. McElroy and Kubik in the morning, 9 a.m. Monday, September 6th, Labor Day. I tweeted out just a little while ago, this is my favorite day of radio all year. By far. Because there's never enough time.
Never.
Now, if we did an eight-hour show, there would not be enough time. There would still be things that we would walk away from and say, you know what, we didn't get to that. You know what, we didn't spend a lot of time on that guy. Probably should have talked about that win, that loss, or that performance. And we just, and it's all still so new, so we're so emotional about it, whether upset, frustrated, happy, can't believe it. It's just amazing. This is the best day of the year in radio as far as I'm concerned, coming off that first weekend of college football, and also because we have another game tonight. Louisville, Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin not going to be on the sideline for the Rebels as they take on Scott Satterfield's Louisville Cardinals, but excited to be able to watch it again tonight. Also over the weekend, Samford took out Tennessee Tech 52-14. Chris Hatcher's group, another big win. Liam Welch, his quarterback, continues right where he left off in the spring, 33 of 44, 374 touchdown passes. Montrell Washington had 8 catches, 170 yards, and a 62-yard punt return for a touchdown. 4 different Samford players had a touchdown reception in that game. So that offense was rolling over the weekend. And I want to go back to something that we just mentioned a second ago, Greg. Mark called in, was talking about Will Anderson and where he'll end up in the draft, how high could he go in the draft. To say that we think he'll be the highest defensive player drafted under Saban, it's going to be tough. Because I mentioned Quinnen Williams, third overall. This is how stupid the Nick Saban era has been at Alabama. I'm just going to give you first-rounders on defense and where they went in the first round. The guys who most people have probably just forgotten about is what makes this completely asinine. Surtain just went 9th. Q went 3rd. Minka 11th. D. Milner went 9th overall.
D. Milner.
9th! It's a top 10 draft pick.
Yep.
Mark Barron 7th. Drake Kirkpatrick 17th. Hightower 25th. No one mentions this name anymore. Marcel Darius was the 3rd overall pick in the draft. 3! 2 guys went ahead of him. That's it.
Jonathan Allen. Who doesn't remember Marcel Darius?
But no, I'm just saying, when guys start bringing up Alabama great defensive players under Saban, right, his name's not usually one of the first thrown out. He was 3rd overall. Jonathan Allen, 17th. Deron Payne, 13th. Rashawn Evans, 22nd overall. Kareem Jackson, 20th. Rolando McClain, 8th overall. Right, it's just You start talking about how great Will Anderson is, and it's not that he's not. He is. You know, he's going to be a high draft pick. I don't think there's any doubt about it. But then it's just, I mean, C.J. Mosley was 17th overall. Ha-ha Clinton Dix was 21st overall. Those are all first rounders. And it's just, there are a lot of different
pretty
things
strong
that you can say and we can bring up that make this entire thing that's happening right now just ridiculous. But when you forgot about top 10 picks under one coaching regime, that's when you know that things are just out of hand.
It's an abundance of riches.
Yeah, it's just it's insane. But I do want to go back to that game, and as we sort of dive into the SEC here, Greg, and what we saw from Alabama, we mentioned that plan a little bit earlier in the show, and I thought it would be one that sort of leaned on the offensive line a little bit more. We knew there was going to be a little bit of a shakeup at tight end because the way Billingsley had handled himself through camp, sort of been in the doghouse. But one of the bright spots offensively had to be Cam Latu and what he did. And I'll tell you this, Alabama fans, I know that you watched him score a couple touchdowns and you watched him catch the football a little bit, but that was not the most impressive part of his game. I thought the physicality that he added in the rushing attack, he did some things in protection where he helped out. You know, 3 for 43 and 2 touchdowns is fantastic. But physically, Greg, he is much different near the football than Jahleel Billingsley is. And Alabama might have something totally different on their hands. A tight end that can flex, can find space, get open, make catches, and be somebody who physically can hold up near the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, having a traditional end of the line of scrimmage why that can also factor into the pass game is not something that we've, for everything that Alabama's had that's been exceptional, right? I mean, we really think about it. They have had every position get drafted in the first round. They have had, I mean, goodness gracious, depth at so many different spots. And while, yes, there have been outstanding tight ends that have come through the program, how many of them were traditional Y tight ends? Like, O.J. Howard was a Y, but really more of a wide receiver, flex him out, create a matchup for him. Irv Smith was amazing, but more of an H that would be moved around and used creatively as a pass-catching threat. Has there been a traditional Y, end-of-the-line-of-scrimmage receiver, or end-of-the-line-of-scrimmage tight end, that we've seen at Alabama? Because there's not one, Cole, that comes to mind that can potentially play to the level that Latu can play. Is there one? Because I can't
Irv's,
think of one.
Irv's the closest.
He but was, Irv was more of an H off the ball guy.
I agree.
He wasn't
I agree.
An end of the line of scrimmage traditional, put your hand in the dirt.
But he physically would add some things in the run game. Like he could handle himself there. But yeah.
Oh, sure.
I mean, he
wasn't scared of it.
I think Latu could be a little bit of a different player than we've seen and add some different things. And I'll go a little bit of a step further. There were not many things when you watched Alabama against Miami that you would come away from disappointed. From an Alabama perspective, Miami, obviously, lots of things. But from an Alabama perspective, there was not a lot of things that you watch in this game and say, oh, man, that's frustrating, or man, that's disappointing, or boy, I didn't like that. Because like I said, we talked about the interior of the defensive line. I think that group was active. I think that group did some things. They made some plays. Secondary played well, and a lot of different guys played well, in some different spots. Linebackers all over the place. Did their job. Will Anderson lived up to every bit of the billing that he had coming into the season. Running backs, great. Quarterback exceeded expectations, and that was pretty damn hard considering what people were saying about him coming into the year. Receivers were good. I mean, Jameson Williams, we had heard about his speed, knew he was transferring in. Now it looks like he's going to be a legitimate playmaker. But I could not walk away from watching that film, Greg, and be disappointed with what I saw from Jahlil Billingsley. And I know he didn't play a lot, and I know he didn't get a lot of time, but the little time that he got towards the end of that game, he looked completely disinterested in being on that football field. And you just have to wonder, moving forward with what Latu did, the way he handled himself in that game, not sure how that position is going to be handled in the near future.
Isn't it wild to think, and this is the beauty of what Alabama's created over the last 15 years, is that it does not matter how good you are. It does not matter. If you're not willing to do the little things, if you're not willing to buy in with 100% commitment to what the program's trying to become, you're replaceable. Every single guy on that roster is replaceable. It doesn't matter if you have legitimate first-round talent. You are replaceable because the guy behind you might very well have first-round talent as well. And that, I think, is a sensational, sensational part of the culture that's been created over the course of the last 15 years, man. Anywhere else in college football, or a vast majority of other places, I would say 99.9%, they would say, you know what, we don't have enough guys like Jahlil Billingsley. He's playing hell or high water.
Got to figure it out. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Like, we'll figure it out. Like, yes, he might not necessarily be what we're looking for right now as far as the locker room guy, but we got to play him. He's too good to keep off the field. Well, at Alabama, you don't have to. If you're not going to do what's expected of you, then you will not be a part of the equation when we prepare for a game. And I think that's why Alabama won the they obviously had the most talent last year, but they won the national championship because of culture and accountability. That's the ultimate thing. Yes, talent's huge, but culture and accountability, nobody has what Alabama has in that regard. So it's just amazing to see how little time he actually got and how he doesn't necessarily have to be part of their future plans because Latu stepped up.
Yeah, he looked good. Offensive line-wise, I thought Evan Neal had a really nice game. I thought Javion Cohen had a good game. He surprised me.
I thought
me.
O-line was solid. I would not say – I was a little bit – granted, the second – at first, it was much better. The protection was very solid. I guess I just thought I would see them really pound Miami more than they did. Were you surprised?
I thought they could have, and I don't think they were – well, one, I don't think they were given the opportunity to.
They were never
really dedicated to just saying, all right, let's go see if we can impose our will.
Right.
But then going to what we talked about with the Miami plan a little bit later in the game, that front began to move a lot more, and there were some misses. There were some whiffs up front. Evan Neal had a bad miss. So it wasn't just the guys that maybe struggled on other parts of the offensive line. There were some guys that just read recognition, having an understanding of what was coming was not there. Some of that chemistry, continuity, you get it, you understand it. I thought Dalcourt did some good things. I didn't think he was dominant or great by any stretch, but I thought he did some good things at center. And like I said, I thought Cohen did some nice things. I thought Ekor did some good things. It was, it was interesting to see Chris Owens at right tackle. We haven't seen him there a lot, and it just looks a little bit different. He doesn't really have a tackle body, but I do think Randolph as that extra tight end helps him a lot. He gives him something a little bit different. And I know he doesn't do a lot in the passing game. He's not a guy that's going to be a real threat catching the football, but he adds some real physicality to a spot that normally you just can't get it. But all in all, I would say sort of a B-plus performance for the offensive line. And again, to the standard, it's been pretty good there with that group, especially last year. But it was fine. I didn't have any issues with it. I didn't think there was anything extremely alarming. And some of the reserves got to play, which is good. You begin to build that depth, have other guys ready. If you need to make some other moves, as you've made leading up to the season, then you'll be fine there. So I think that was just another positive takeaway. And I still think they have the ability to kind of go play that way if they want to. And we didn't see Alabama really do that in the opener. From an Auburn perspective, a lot of folks have asked about the offensive line. Kind of want to know how that group performed. Yes, they had Akron outmatched. We heard Ben Hartsock on the show. You can get that podcast at jocksfm.com. Discuss the weight differential between the Auburn O-line, the Akron D-line, specifically the interior of that Akron defensive line. But I did see some improvements. I mean, I thought that group played with a little bit of a different attitude. Now, the system, the scheme helped them a lot. What they were doing helped them. But the center left, I thought, was good, was fine. I'm still a little bit concerned about the right side. I thought Troxell had a pretty good game. Brahms had a good game. Council did some really good things. Listen, he's played against his old team. You know he's motivated. And he was definitely motivated in that game, maybe more so than the other guys. But that's a little bit different. That's a personal one for him. But right side's got to come along. You saw multiple guards on the right side. There's one big loss inside on a pass rush move. Right tackle, a little concerned when he's on an island. That's one that's going to probably need some help in 2 weeks when they play Penn State, because Penn State showed they might not be great against the run, but they're going to have a couple of guys who can get to the quarterback. And that's going to be one where it's got to be all systems go if you're going to be competitive in that game. Some other teams around the SEC that we thought performed well. I think the one that sticks out to me, Greg, that was a massive question mark that we were all kind of waiting to see, didn't know what it was going to look like. We're taking a lot of these with a grain of salt. I get it. I understand it. But Will Levis looked like every bit of what we thought he might be able to be in Liam Cohen's system there in Lexington. They take out Louisiana Monroe 45-10. Levis goes for 367, 4 touchdowns. Rodriguez had over 120 yards on the ground. Josh Ali had a big day. But, I mean, that was again, we talk about handling your business. We know it's Louisiana Monroe. But Kentucky, you want to talk about teams that struggle out of the gate? I mean, Kentucky's been down to the wire with EKU recently. They've been down to the wire with Southern Miss. They've lost to Southern Miss recently. They are not a good first quarter of the season team. And now, especially with the non-cons, they go out and handle their business exactly the way that they're supposed to. The defense in front was dominant, and Will Levis gives them a totally different dimension pushing the ball down the field.
Yeah, I thought it was a very solid performance. I know it's Louisiana Monroe, like you said, but it's not about where you're going and who you're playing against. It's about how well do you execute. So I thought Kentucky looked very solid. I thought they were a little sluggish early. Got it going a little bit there towards the end of the first quarter and started to find a bit of a rhythm. But how many teams had as dominant a performance from start to finish as Kentucky? Well, we know Tennessee, messed around for the entire first half, okay? We know
first two drives great, and then all of a sudden that thing ran into a wall for a couple drives.
A&M looked lethargic there in the first half.
Not off to a great start in that game.
Not pretty whatsoever. I thought Florida's performance in the first half left an awful lot to be desired.
Kind of same thing as Tennessee. First two drives great, and then didn't know what was happening.
Fell off a cliff. How about Arkansas's performance against Rice, who, by the way, we told you Rice was going to be a little bit of a handful. So not saying that I thought they responded beautifully down the stretch, but it was not an easy performance for Arkansas. Mississippi State, don't even get me started with
them.
All right. Missouri, who played against Central Michigan and made Central Michigan at times look like they were the Michigan Wolverines of 1997. I mean, Missouri ended up playing pretty well over the course of four quarters, but my goodness, they left a lot of plays on the field. Auburn was dominant, give them a ton of credit. South Carolina was dominant, but albeit against a team that's won three games in the last 4 years. So we're talking about when you look around the league, not a lot of teams got off to great starts and had four-quarter performances. Kentucky was one of those after a slightly sluggish start there at the beginning. I think Levis looked very solid and confident. But then again, I think, of course, the windows are going to get a little tighter in the games to come.
I'm going to blast through a couple of the games that we won't spend a ton of time on because when we come back, there are a few that I really do want to dive into. A&M, Kent State, 41-10. Haynes King has a much bigger arm than I anticipated. I mean, that dude can rip it. I mean, he's got a big arm. I guess I anticipated him to be a little bit more scramble guy and not being able to set up and make big-time throws guy, but he can. Now, with that, he appears to be, and I know this is a small sample size, Greg, he appears to be big risk taker to me because there are a couple throws back across his body. There are a couple of throws in traffic, and they all didn't end up. The pick that he had, I know, was a tip ball. I saw that one. But he looks like he's going to be a risk taker as well. That's going to have to be managed. But, man, I watch that offense, and I see him in two back, and I see Smith and A-Chain moving around, and you still got Spiller, and then I see Spiller as a lead blocker, and then I see Weidemeyer moving back and forth. I'm just like, man, this is a toy chest that any kid would love to play with. Like, this is just – it's going to be fun for Jimbo managing the personnel he's got in that group.
Yeah, but I was a little disappointed. Like you alluded to, the risks. I thought he made some bad decisions, man.
Yeah.
I mean, those are not things. And look, Jimbo's defense is really good. So you cannot, under any circumstance, take unnecessary risks with the football when you have a defense that's built the way Texas A&M's defense is built. Like, just be smart. Manage the game to a certain extent. Make your plays when they're there to be made, but my goodness, man, you're not Johnny Football. Like, not at this point, at least. Maybe you'll get there, but you're not there yet. So I think he needs to take some strides as far as what you can and can't do during the game because there's absolutely no reason why he should have attempted some of those throws. While I appreciate it somewhat, it scares me to death. I don't like it at all. So hopefully he cleans it up, and I think if he does, he's going to be an excellent quarterback in this league. I was really impressed with the skill set.
And a little change up there, too. Kenyon Green actually got to start at right tackle, not left tackle. Jameer Johnson, former Tennessee offensive lineman, was at left tackle. But that group was sort of up and down. They did some really good things, and then they had some letdowns. Arkansas 38-17 over Rice, you mentioned it. Treylon Smith was great out of the backfield. Treylon Burks had two drops in this game that were bad, alarming drops in this game. I would be concerned about that. And again, going back to consistency, KJ Jefferson, that efficiency and consistency is going to have to take big, big, big strides if that offense is going to be one that's difficult to manage this fall.
Yeah, and I'm curious. I'm going to see him this weekend. So I'm really, really anxious to see exactly what it is they're going to look like up close and personal. But, man, that team in the second half, that's what I want to see for 60 minutes, right? Where they're mixing run pass, they're gashing them on the ground. I thought KJ played okay. I wouldn't say it was great by any stretch. I wouldn't say it was bad by any stretch. I just think there's room for consistency to grow within that offense. I thought his legs were obviously a powerful weapon, had the touchdown called back, but you saw him in the open field, what he can be as a dynamic weapon. So there's a lot to take from that Arkansas game. Of course, it was a very prime look-ahead situation with Texas coming to town just next week, already sold out, standing room only tickets available. However, those are almost sold out. So obviously, you know the buzz is going to be surrounding that second week. Very obvious situation for a letdown. They didn't allow it to come to fruition, though, throughout the course of a four-quarter game. They rallied, and I think they kind of showed their maturity a little bit. Like them saying, all right, enough is enough, we're putting them away. That's what you want to see from a young football team. Maybe slightly immature there in the first half, first 20 or first 30, 35 minutes, because they let that touchdown out the gate in the second half too against Rice. But man, I thought all things considered, pretty solid performance from Arkansas.
I think you'll like the O-line play. I think you'll like the running back play. I think you'll be concerned about quarterback, and I think you'll be alarmed at what you see from Treylon Burks. Just not like him at all.
Right.
South Carolina leans on the backs in the O-line. Good game there. Made it easy for Zeb Nolan. He throws four touchdowns. Defensive line did stick out, and I understand the level of competition, but that group's going to be active. That group's going to have guys who can make plays. And a couple of those guys did jump out to me when I watched. Inigbari was nice off the edge. Aaron Sterling's going to be able to help make plays. So Zach Pickens was pretty good inside. That defensive line is going to give people headaches, and they're going to have to, because I don't know how much they're going to have at second and third level. And maybe your best running back wasn't even on the field. So White and Lloyd got the majority of the carries, and they were able to get it done. So South Carolina, but again, handled their business. That's it. Some teams go out there and get it done and do what you're supposed to do. You give South Carolina credit for doing that. Before we go to break, and Greg said he was going to be mad at me if I mentioned it, but I'm just throwing it out there. East Tennessee State 23-3 over Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I was wondering why didn't address that.
I can't believe you haven't wanted to spend a segment on it.
Like, I'm just going to say this. I don't have words for it. I don't know how to describe it. I watched a little bit of it. I couldn't go any further. I'll say this. It's worse than you think. And that game could have been worse than that.
Oh.
Well, there was a pick six that was called back for taunting. There was another interception that was dropped.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that rebuild is going to be a lot different than we thought it was going to be. But goodness gracious.
It's not off to a good start.
There was another game in the SEC that was disappointing for a lot of people. Why did it turn out the way that it did? We'll try to dive into that one and give you our explanation based on what we've seen next right here on McElroy and Kubik in the Morning. Back in McElroy and Kubik in the Morning, 9:27 a.m. Labor Day, September 6th, live. Three-man front will be live after us. Matt McLaren will be live after that. Paul's live after that. So live reaction to college football week one all day right here on Jocks 94.5. Listen online, jocksfm.com. Go to the App Store, search WJOX. You can download that for free. iPhone, Android, check it out there. Or tell your home smart speaker, listen to Jocks. You can grab us that way. Podcast, jocksfm.com. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get yours, please like, rate, review, subscribe to those. Paul mentioned a little bit earlier that he thought the ACC had the worst weekend of the Power 5 conferences. It's going to be tough for me to not go Pac-12. Now, the Oregon win over Fresno State is actually a good win. We all know that. Jake Haener, by the way, 298 and a touchdown. That kid's legit. USC, 30-7 over San Jose State is a nice win. It's a good win. Handle their business against a pretty good football team. But Washington goes down to Montana. Kansas State thumps Stanford. Purdue takes out Oregon State. Nevada knocks off Cal. BYU beats Arizona. And Utah State beats Washington State. Oh.
It's no bueno. Not a good look.
Whoa.
Tough. Tough.
But. You can hang your hat on one team rolling into the backyard of one of your teams that nobody expected you to get it done, and they were able to make that happen. Speaking of backyards, go over to Cahaba Valley Road and check out my friends at Backyard Adventures. If you're like me and my wife, we were searching for a playground a long time for our kids. Thankfully, we came across Backyard Adventures. Went out to Cahaba Valley Road, let our kids spend 30, 45 minutes playing on their playgrounds that they already have set up. They choose which options that they wanted. Jeff and the guys came out, measured our yard, had a 3D printout for what it was going to look like, which way we should go. And then the best part, they came out and assembled it. It's going to be warrantied. If you move, they're going to move it for you. And they have all the different options to choose from, and you get to customize the playground that's going to be in your backyard for your kids. It's easy. Go to BackyardAlabama.com, call 408, the number 4FUN, 408-4386, or check them out at Cahaba Valley Road. Also, birthday parties still available. Two-hour space rental on the party coordinator is going to help you set it up. They clean up after. You take the kids, the presents, and the cake, They go play, and you get out of there, and you're done. That's it. Backyard Adventures, BackyardAlabama.com, or 408, the number 4-FUN. LSU travels out to Los Angeles. We know what they went through. We know how difficult a trip it was. 10.5-hour bus ride to Houston, practice in Houston all week, and then you get on a plane, head out to L.A., and go travel. You can say that if you want, but you also have to apply that to Tulane that just went toe-to-toe with Oklahoma. Mm. Not a lot different. So I'm not going to just take that and say why certain things were acceptable for what I saw in this game. Some of what you brought up earlier, Greg, with the effort by certain individuals in this game. But I'm going to credit UCLA off the bat because the plan that they had in place, Greg and I both raved about what we saw against Hawaii, how cool the run scheme was, how they differentiated, the different things that they do. And then they come out and put on a formation clinic against LSU. I mean, the personnel groupings, the formations that they showed, almost none of which they showed in week 1 against Hawaii, and had LSU defenders out of place, had LSU defenders uncertain where they were, had LSU defenses misaligned, and then went out and executed some of the other things that we talked about the week before. And Charbonnet goes for 117. And even though Max Johnson looked pretty good and Keyshawn Boutte was ridiculous again, it wasn't enough for LSU to be able to knock off UCLA, who it's time to start having some real conversations about being one of the better teams in the Pac-12. But this was an impressive performance, Greg. This was not LSU dropping the ball. This was not LSU just not showing up. Parts of it, yes. There were some letdown performances there. But I think UCLA went and won this game. And I'll say this. LSU was outcoached by Chip Kelly and his staff in this game.
Mm. Ooh. I would actually say it was a decided advantage in favor of Chip Kelly. I mean, that was a clinic. The formations by itself. Take away the run schemes and the way they draw them up. How you can cut the field in half, have this side of the field on your right running this specific play. On the left is this specific play. You have formations where you have guys running all over the place. LSU can't get aligned. And then to couple it with the physicality that UCLA plays with. Dude, they are a heavy-handed team. Their running backs run ridiculously hard. They finish every run. Like, you got to bring your lunch pail. This is a blue-collar outfit. Surprisingly enough, when you watch them, they are so much more physical than they were the last couple years. And you saw it build into this moment. It was a clinic. I mean, Chip Kelly and his staff put on an absolute formation clinic. If you want to look at how to put stress on second-level defenders, watch UCLA-LSU. Watch them. And if you want to put conflict on so many different defenders on almost every single snap, watch UCLA and LSU, man. It was, as an offensive guy that loves the run game, it was a beautiful plan. And it was so flawlessly executed throughout most of the game. Man, it's just old school. It's just old school football with a new school philosophy with how they get to the areas of the field that they were trying to attack. Man, I loved it. I loved every second of it, watching it. And man, if I could do it like Chip Kelly and call an offense like that, I would have the time of my life on the chalkboard every single Monday as we were putting the plan together.
It was pretty cool because I was standing on Steve Spurrier Field before the game in Gainesville at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium at something else. There's something else that I'm missing there. And I was talking to Ed Warner, who has coached at Ohio State. He's coached at Michigan. He's now down at FAU. And he has service academy background in his coaching resume. Yeah. And we started talking about Chip because he and Chip know each other really well. And I was complimenting that scheme that we saw against Hawaii in late last year. And he said, man, I'm going to tell you right now. He said, Chip loves scheming the run more than anything else. Anything. He loves it. He loves drawing up run plays. He loves trying to find different advantages in the run game. He said that's absolutely his favorite thing to do. And he said, so I'm not surprised at how they look. He said, I won't be surprised if they win tonight. He said, because he finally has some guys. He's got some veterans. He's got some playmakers. And he said, he knows this early in the season especially, he said, trust me, he'll have something for him tonight. And he did. The two tight end sets, three tight end sets, the motions. I mean, it was an absolute clinic from a formation standpoint, what they did. And I said the only reason that I wasn't sure if UCLA could actually beat LSU was Dorian Thompson-Robinson. I just didn't know if they had enough quarterback play to go win, and then he only has to throw the ball 16 times. He goes 9 of 16, yep. 260, three touchdowns and a pick. And Greg Dulich goes nuts. And, I mean, this team is just – they are fun to watch, and they are – they're going to be a problem because they have – I mean, an all-senior defense. You have an upperclassman-laden offensive line, and now you got a run scheme that can hurt you multiple ways with – and I thought if you listen to the broadcast, it was an interesting discussion of could Charbonnet be the best back that he's had?
No. I don't know if I'd go that far. The guy last year was a monster. Felton, he was a handful. But I think for what this team needs, Charbonnet doesn't have the home run hitting speed. That's his one knock. But tell you what, he's a bruiser. And with what this offense is and what it's become, while they might give up a little bit as far as the home run potential, he's going to earn those tough yards. And that's not a bad spot to be when you're trying to play that complementary style that UCLA is trying to play. I just want to go through their schedule quickly, okay, just for a half second. Now, I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it, that's for sure. But who are they losing to? Tell me who UCLA right now, tell me who you would pick against them, okay? Oregon's going to be a tough game. They get them at home. They're on the road at Utah. Utah was far from impressive in week one, got it going a little later, but it's Weber State. Will be a tough game for sure. But man, Utah's going to bring their lunch pail, stop the run. That'll be one heck of a matchup. It's on the road. SC looked really good against San Jose State this weekend, even though no one saw it on the Pac-12 network. I'm assuming they looked really good. I haven't been able to watch the tape. So I just look at their schedule. Man, who's beating them? Honestly, who's beating them right now that you feel real confident in saying, oh yeah, that's a loss for sure for the UCLA Bruins?
Not for sure, but there are right now some toss-up games.
Sure, you know, I mean, but a toss-up game is all you ask for in the Pac-12, man. If you can get to 10-1, 11-1, 10-2, I mean, you're in the New Year's Six hunt. So, and with the win over LSU, assuming LSU gets things going in the right direction from this point forward, that's a pretty significant resume booster.
And I mean, listen, they're going to have their hands full with Fresno this weekend, next weekend, and then because they'll be off this weekend, but. I mean, Arizona doesn't look scary anymore. Washington doesn't look near as scary.
Oh, Lord, no.
Want to see what's going on with Thibodeau and Oregon. Don't know. I mean, that I don't really think that that's one that I look at and say UCLA can't win it. Not going to say that they can't beat USC. I mean, even though it's at the Coliseum, I mean, we know what that game is. We know what that game means. So I'm with you. I look down the schedule, and there's not a definitive loss on it. So
every game is winnable, which is a pretty significant improvement from where they were a year ago, or 2 years ago for that.
Well, and if DTR continues to grow and become a little bit more efficient, I mean, if they get out of them what they got against UCLA, bootleg play action, hit your throws you have to hit,
right?
Don't make bad decisions and give points to the other team, then you'll be in decent shape. Maybe the most disappointing part about this for LSU, linebacker play, D-line wasn't as bad. Linebacker play looked lost most of the game. You talked about the secondary, a couple guys making business decisions in certain situations. Yeah, that was bad. But you also went in against a Pac-12 team, and you ran for 49 yards.
Oh.
I know what the offense is. I don't care what the offense is. Oh. You went to a Pac-12 stadium against a Pac-12 team, and you rushed for 49 yards.
Ain't going to get it done.
Offensive line did not look good, dude.
Nope.
They did not look good up
front. At all.
So, like, I'm not at all surprised that their rushing numbers were disappointing. I mean, that was – when I was watching that offensive line, I was like, you got to be kidding me. Not that they were ever super war daddies. A couple years ago, they were not super war daddies along the offensive line. But, man, they were so much better than they were what we saw. And, hey, they might grow from here, but that's not the LSU standard along the offensive line that I've come to expect. I don't know how you
feel. No, but Ed Ingram should be one of the better guards in the league. Liam Shanahan played all last year, and he is more than a serviceable center. Chasten Hines has played good ball in his career. That it should not have been that problematic. And that was probably the most disappointing part of the game, because there were a lot of times that Max was under pressure, and he was still able to go make a play and still able to find a way to make something happen. I thought he still played a great football game. I mean, 26 of 46 is not great. He had the one interception, but I thought based on what he was dealt with, the fact that he didn't have a run game to lean on, and the fact that he was under pressure the majority of the times that he dropped back, I thought Max Johnson still had a heck of a football game. I mean, he put them in position battled to be competitive late.
He gave him a chance.
Yeah, he and Boutte were kind of what they needed to be, what we thought they were going to be. But, man, there was a lot of that game that was not what it needed to be and did not look the way that it needed to look. So, all right, let's step out of the SEC for just a moment. When we come back, some other games that caught our attention that we enjoyed, and one team that we thought was going to be in the playoff that now we might have some real concerns about. We discuss it next right here on McElroy and Cubic in the morning. Final segment of the show, Labor Day, Monday, 9:45 a.m., September the 6th. Excited to be with you. We'll be back tomorrow, 7 to 10 a.m. More college football to discuss there. Todd Blackledge is on the call for that Alabama-Miami game. He'll be with us at 9 a.m. tomorrow, so be sure to turn in and check out what he had to say about that game and everything that went along with it. Birmingham Southern gets a win over the weekend, 42-17.
Yes, sir. Let him know. Let them know.
I'm trying to that they knocked off.
They now know.
Knocked off LaGrange.
And it's also Huntington Hate Week. We got the Wesley Cup.
Okay, there you go. LaGrange College. Robert Shefford goes 25 for 188, 3 touchdowns. You ever do
so
that?
What do you do? No, who?
Did you ever do that?
No, I was a receiver at Birmingham. No, I didn't.
Tavion Fleming went 5 for 107 in a touchdown.
They pounding the rock.
The ground game was going.
That's what they do.
For Birmingham Southern over the weekend.
That's what I'm talking about. Let these people know. That's what I'm talking about, baby.
I'm trying to
get them all in for you here.
All the in-state scores. Trying to let you know.
Wow, just ramp it up a little bit, Damian.
I know you had to wait for your score there.
Yeah, it happens.
It's okay.
It happens. Right. Yeah.
Save the best for last.
Exactly.
Well, you know, the beauty is we had to wait for your score, but you don't have to wait weeks for dental care when you need it on your schedule. Or worse, you have a dental emergency, you can't get immediate help. I'm Greg McElroy. I'm here to tell you about Family Care Dental, the urgent care office where you can be seen the same day. They have 3 locations, Hoover, Fultondale, and Homewood. They're accepting patients of all ages for emergencies or routine dental appointments. Most insurance plans are accepted, and they can see you on Fridays and Saturdays. Family Care Dental, 874-9605. That's 874-9605.
We saw maybe an alarming game for a college football playoff contender over the weekend. And I don't know if there should be too much made into this. A little bit of a schedule change, obviously. First game of the season. I'll give Willie Fritz credit. He's a hell of a coach, and he has dialed things up for a while now. He has sort of morphed with the times, going from triple option to spread option, and then sort of back to a little bit of a different style that they're running now at Tulane. But they go toe to toe with Oklahoma, and if not for a couple of late turnovers, had every chance to go win that football game. 40-35. Oklahoma gets the win over Tulane, technically at home. Rattler was 30 of 39 for 304 yards, but some alarming decisions in that game,
yeah.
Greg. Two bad picks.
Good.
And
right.
Just he didn't look like, okay, here comes the best quarterback in college football.
No, I did not think he played very well. Now, the numbers would suggest that it was a very solid game. But I thought there were some real questionable decisions. I just didn't think he at any point. I think it looked like he was pressing, trying too hard. I'm not really sure why. But if you remember early in the season last year, it took him a little while to find his stride. Remember, he was benched at one point in the game against Texas for a series for making bad decisions. So maybe this is just one of those players that plays his best football as the season goes along after maybe a little bit of a slow start. Some guys are like that, and I would hope for Lincoln Riley that's not the case for Spencer Rattler, because they have some big games coming up here very soon. But yeah, some of the decision-making just not in line with what I expected for a guy that's a little more veteran to finish the season so strong.
Now, Marvin Mims was everything as advertised.
He's real.
5 for 117. Missed him on 2 balls down the field where he could have had even more. But Michael Pratt was fantastic for Tulane. He throws for 296, 3 touchdowns, ran for 34 yards and another score.
Tough.
He kept him in that game, but then the fumbles late were big. And had 3 for the game, lost all 3 of them. And obviously won on the final drive, trying to go take the lead. You hit that 2-point conversion, you feel like you're in good shape, get the ball back. And he's trying to make a play. I'm not mad at the kid. He's trying to make a play. He's trying to keep his team in it. I get it. But if you don't put it on the turf, you never know what happens. But how much has your opinion changed of Oklahoma? I know it's one game, but are there real concerns for you as far as not just getting in, but maybe being a team that can realistically go win the college football playoff?
No, I think this is a notoriously slow-starting football team. And they have not been a group because think of how they're built. I mean, I was a little concerned with what I saw defensively. I felt like they laid down a little bit, and they got to keep the pedal down, man.
Tackling was bad. Tackling was really bad. And, and I know it was across the board, and a lot of people were saying that.
Sure.
It was extra bad for Oklahoma.
Yes.
Like, extra
it was
bad.
Unusually. And hey, credit to Tulane. Like, we got to start there. Tulane played their freaking tails off. I mean, they ran hard. I mean, they just played so hard, so passionately. And displayed the toughness. Like they said, they came out and said, yep, we're going to try to resemble our hometown of New Orleans, which has just been hit by a hurricane. We got to be as tough as the people that cover us and support us. So that was a rallying cry for them, and they played their tails off. Tons of credit to them. But the tackling was disappointing. They were able to get decent penetration at times, but it was not the same. It felt like it was reckless abandon penetration. Like, it didn't look thoughtful. Where, yes, they might be getting to the backfield, but they were also out of position. You know what I'm saying? It was a little bit too loose for me, but hey, it's week one. We're going to see huge jumps from teams from week one to week two. Oklahoma's one of those teams that needs to make a significant leap on both sides of the ball because they left a lot of plays in the field offensively, and then defensively they gave up way too much. Extra yardage, like you said, by missed tackles, but they also were out of position. It was not the controlled chaos that we saw down the stretch last year. It was just chaos. And you got to make sure that it's controlled chaos in the weeks to come against some of the offenses they'll face.
Well, one thing that wasn't chaotic in a lot of games was defense. And we mentioned through the offseason that are we going to see a bit of a resurgence? Now, none of us are expecting us to go back to 1992, but we did think that defenses would take a step. And I think this is interesting for tonight's game as well. Can Ole Miss get a stop? Can the Louisville defense improve at all? We don't know exactly what they're going to look like, but I found myself continuously over the weekend thinking, man, like, defenses are taking a step. Like, they're kind of back a little bit. I mean, Virginia Tech, North Carolina was 17-10. I mean, how many times did North Carolina not score 40 last year? Georgia Clemson, 10-3. Iowa State only put 16 on the board. They win 16-10 over Northern Iowa. That Penn State-Wisconsin game, there was not a lot of offense to get excited about in that game. Both defenses played their rear ends off. But I mean, it was a hell of a game. It was a fun game. It was a great atmosphere, but by no means a track meet that we've become accustomed to across college football. Washington, 13-7, they lose to Montana. So it does feel like in certain spots we're seeing defenses play a little bit better than maybe what we saw last year, which I think is good because that'll help you get more competitive games. That'll give us some upsets here and there. But it was a big question mark that we had coming into this season was, could defenses – all together be a little bit better than last season, and I think week one showed us that that might be very possible.
Yeah, no, I think the defense, and it first of all, there's no way for it to get worse, right? I mean, last year, collectively across the board, the worst defensive football I think I've ever seen. Ever.
Easily.
Every single league looked like the Big 12 of 5 years ago. You really think about it. I mean, it's pretty crazy when you really think about it. So that includes the SEC, by the way, which has always prided itself on playing great defense. Not the case in 2020. Hopefully it will be the case here in 2021. But I thought tackling, for the most part, still very disappointing, but it's week one. Week one tackling always stinks. Week one in bowl games, tackling is optional, it feels like, from time to time for some of these teams. So expect it to get better here in the next couple weeks. But I thought the run fits, I thought like there were less free plays given up by most teams. Just collectively, if I'm just going to say a generic thought, there weren't as many freebies that were given up. Not as many blown coverages. Saw some occasionally, led to touchdowns. For instance, Florida State, first touchdown for Notre Dame last night based on a blown coverage by Florida State. So it is, I think, I'm optimistic about defensive football here in 2021, but yeah, a lot of things still to figure out here in the next couple of weeks.
No, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And obviously, we saw Bama's defense look exceptional. Auburn's defense looked good. UAB's defense going back a week ago to Wednesday night looked good. So I think that's going to be a part that we're going to have to maybe pay a little bit more attention to moving forward because it's not just going to be absent like it was a season ago. Defenses are going to be more impactful as it comes to how teams match up, how games play out, and actually what we get from those games. Tonight, what are your thoughts? Final thoughts on Ole Miss-Louisville, no Lane Kiffin on the sideline.
It makes me, as much as we think this thing's going to be high scoring, what we just talked about with defense, I would not be that surprised if both defenses, after hearing all offseason how this is going to be a track meet, I wouldn't be shocked if both defenses played really well compared to what we'd expect. I think this game is going to be lower scoring than that 75.5 that you've been throwing out there all week long.
And I'm going to stay with it. That Big 12 game of 5-8 years ago you mentioned, I think we get that tonight. I think we get that tonight. It's going to happen. I think turnover's the difference, and Louisville will have more than Ole Miss. And I'll take Ole Miss to win, and I'll take that to hit the over. So great stuff. Drive safe back from Tallahassee, Greg. When we come back, 7 to 10 a.m. tomorrow, we'll break down more college football from over the weekend. Todd Blackledge will be with us. Three-man front next on Jocks 94.5.